It's Wednesday, July 2nd, 2008, and you're listening to episode 106 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 53 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name is John.
And I'm shocked.
Yeah, so am
actually.
My name's Chris.
Chris, explain why they're
shocked. Well, little slight setup. Before we started rolling,
John was giving misinformation about Wally, which I corrected him.
Dan was leaping to be offended, as he often does.
And it turned out I was right.
Communists versus conservatives, and, you know, girls, you're both pretty, so it's okay. But
Check out this hair.
But to
your internet penises are very
to
large.
Distract both of them from their ridiculous fight about a Disney movie.
Of course, they start measuring from the
yes. I asked Chris, "How did you meet your wife?" Because actually, I was genuinely curious, and also I wanted to distract them. So, Chris, you were telling us a story based on that.
I was telling the story. I was relating the whole story of the whole relationship thing, which I won't bore everybody with now because
it was a bottle of tequila.
Exciting.
You were freshman in high school, and then you know there was a kid involved.
She got pregnant. Her dad came over with a shotgun. You got married, et cetera, et cetera.
He used to terrify me when I was in high school and college.
Really?
In fact, we were together in high school. He didn't like me at all because he thought I was in college, which, of course, I wasn't. But, yeah, he didn't want
How does someone
think you're
in college? Can't you just tell them you're in high school?
I didn't really talk to him that much because I would just pull up for them to her to come out. And I wasn't necessarily a house in-goer to go and get my date.
Oh.
He didn't
like you because you avoided him for years.
Wow.
Oh, he could have, but he likes
you're
me
a vagina. Now, please continue.
Anyway, so conversation turned towards BattleTech and a number of things about BattleTech, but I was saying that one of the things that we did, and this is kind of a dorky slash kind of cool thing.
there's nothing cool about
I applaud the
effort. Don't get me wrong.
It is cool. Listen, once I finish explaining it, you'll actually think it's kind of cool. So here's what we did, or here's what I did anyway. When I was in college, and I think she was out of high school at this point, or she may have been a senior in high school. That either way, this was during the time of the Clan Invasion. So we're talking in BattleTech years. We're talking 3050. This is when the whole thing was happening. This wasn't post 2K. It hadn't happened. All of that kind of stuff. This was while it was all going on. We would write letters back and forth to each other as if we were living in that time. Okay, so I was a Hauptmann in the 9th FedCom Regiment. Okay, so I was.
Continue.
And anyway, so I wrote her letters and I talked about just where we were stationed because I had set this up. Wait,
no,
wait,
no,
no, this
no.
We're
not laughing at you. Unicron's making funny faces at us.
I set this up as if it started in 3049, so the clans hadn't invaded yet. But I did a little foreshadowing in my letter about hearing rumblings that there was something, you know, further up towards the border.
Was this
the Steiner border in the periphery?
Did you know about the clans before they were released?
Oh, yeah,
so
yeah.
You were
giving this one
girl foreshadowing about the entire BattleTech arc.
That, like, millions of ravishing, rabid fans would have been, like, dying to be on your little love letters between you and your, you know, not then, but
this
your wife.
This was... The Kerensky trilogy had not completed. I think it was probably between Blood Legacy and whatever the second book was called. I can't remember, but it was somewhere around there. But so we wrote letters back and forth, and she, and our home world was New Aragorn, which at that time was a border world between Federated Suns and Capellan Confederation.
New Aragorn. What's next?
Look it up on the map, man. It's there. No. Look it up on the map, man. It's there.
I'm sure it's there.
I want to live on Gimli's balls.
I've seen the map, too. And I mean, they have, like, Dune on there.
Hesperus, too.
Right.
And yeah,
so you could... I can believe it.
But you know what? Here's the thing, though. When I run a BattleTech game, and I look at those maps, at the maps, like, in Objective Raids, and I see the crappy world names, I typically pick a different planet. And especially if I'm sitting here trying to romance someone.
Chris, what happened between your star-crossed lovers?
Okay, but wait, no. I'll finish the story here, and then you guys can go ahead and continue ripping on me.
Shouldn't we point out, too, that your wife is not necessarily a gamer?
That is correct. She is not necessarily a gamer. She has gamed. She has tried BattleTech. She's tried D&D.
She's been the girlfriend who didn't want to be there.
She participated in the BattleTech in-character love letter exchange.
her door card is there.
Absolutely. Because and I'll tell you why. Not only did she participate, she wrote letters back, but then she went out with either her sister or her friend and had pictures taken of her on a lakeshore, and then she gave that lakeshore a different name as if it was from New Aragorn, and then sent those pictures to me in the letter that she wrote back to me because I'm close to the front, of course.
And you're separated and you miss each other.
And just so you know that I didn't pick this regiment at random.
Impugn your judgment on that.
The 9th RCT in the Armies of the Federated Commonwealth was the regiment, that regimental combat team that took on the clans on, I'm not going to be able to remember the world, but it was a regiment that they took on early on in the first book that they ended up getting defeated or pushed off the world. They weren't wiped out. But anyway, the culmination of all of this ended up being...
Is this Twycross?
The culmination was the hero's welcome when he got home. I mean...
It wasn't Twycross. Or maybe it was. No, that was the battle to retake. It was the world they first got kicked off of, I believe.
Only Comstar was on Twycross.
No, it's Tookie.
You're right.
Anyway, but the culmination was of this is that at some point I got shore leave, and so came back to Aragorn.
Oh, God.
No, wait. And it wasn't like we had like BattleTech sex or anything, but we...
battle sex.
Hey, baby. I'm a Warhammer. What are you?
And we combined the words together, and there was a capital B and capital S. But no, what happened was I got shore leave. We came back, and there was this Chinese restaurant that we would always go to. And so we went. Well, it was a border world, so it makes sense. But we went and had dinner. We went and had dinner at the Chinese restaurant, and we essentially were role playing. As we were having dinner, I was being the person I was who had written the letter. She was being the person she was who had written the letter, and we did that, I think, maybe until dinner was over, and then we kind of realized, okay, this has gone about as far as it go. Let's just go and be normal and do whatever we normally do. So yeah, absolutely.
Wow,
it culminated. But yeah,
that is the biggest, literally the biggest dork romance story I've ever heard.
That is true. But you know what?
I mean, it's cool. It's cool. Yeah. It's great. It's totally sweet.
I laugh my ass off, but I'm jealous.
That is totally sweet. I mean, really. Isn't that what every gamer out there wants? Is
no.
Like some dork romance?
No, I.
Well, and I have to admit, she, and you guys actually made me really think about that. She's not a gamer, but yet she played that good girlfriend role in the sense that totally participated.
Something she could jump
totally
onto.
Participated. Absolutely. Well, and you're absolutely right, John. That's exactly what happened.
She jumped right on it.
Absolutely. And, four kids later, she still hasn't gotten off of it, so.
Yeah.
So, Dan, you have a problem with this. You think this is...
I don't have a problem with it.
You don't have a problem with romance or anything like that. Course,
right. So. And, I would feel proud for Chris if he had gotten a girlfriend who was into gaming. But to take someone whose only foray into geekdom is the fact that they are LARPing your dating relationship.
Nah, I'm all for it. I mean,
I'm all for
you
it
can
too.
Only ask a non-gamer to do so much, and honestly, Chris,
I'm a gamer, and you couldn't ask me to do this.
I know his wife went above and beyond the call of duty. That's a good woman right there.
This is no different than your wormhole story when your first date with Carl.
She used the word wormhole once,
dude. That's like half of one geek point.
Yeah,
letters in BattleTech characters is about. Five billion geek points.
This woman is not a dork, but she loved her geek so much, she was willing to, get in with his perverse LARPing fantasies.
Right.
And hey,
I have to give her credit because I never prompted her to the pictures were really the culmination of that whole thing for me. She had these pictures taken, wrote on the back where it was as if it was on that
world.
All right,
just tell me one thing, just so I don't feel too dirty. She was not writing to you as Cassandra Blake, was she?
Oh, God. No, I was not. Because
that is my one lasting contribution to the BattleTech universe, so don't
make... No, she was not. She was not Sassy Cassie. That was my one lasting contribution
to the BattleTech world. So I'd hate to think that like I somehow had some hand in romancing Chris.
That would be very strange. No, she was a supportive woman back in the home front, and I was you know, brave soldier out fighting these strange invaders from beyond the periphery.
Yeah. You know, I could buy it.
Growing up, Tex and I really did not like you.
Wow. Well. That's an interesting revelation at this point.
I think I've told Chris this before, okay, haven't I?
I've known it, so
I don't think you have.
No, because okay, well, you have to. Yeah,
give it to me. Right, Come on, let's go.
Remember, Chris, before he lays this on you, the Periphery source book was Dawn's absolute most favorite role playing game book of any time.
The original,
the one you wrote. Yes,
is that where she gets all of her Rasal Hate characters out of?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, when you say the one I wrote, do you mean the one that was published by Foster or the original manuscript that I sent to her?
Well, let me put to you this way. The one that she was published by FASA was her favorite, and the one that you sent to her is very near and dear to her heart.
Oh, that's very nice.
She really appreciates it.
The original one was also probably my favorite as well. And that actually made me fall, you know, not getting too much into my own BattleTech, you know, wankness mm-hmm. here, but that was the book that really made me fall in love with the BattleTech universe. It made me realize this, the true potential that existed in that setting. And I felt very lucky and privileged to be able to expand upon just that specific region. And it's still, even to this day, if I go and look at current products that come out, and see the maps that I remember drawing on my living room floor after I poring through all these books to find where all these worlds are, because the Periphery was not organized in any semblance of any sort of organization at all. And so you really had to sit and try and figure out, and I did by hand, figure out where all these other worlds were that they're
Can't
mentioning
you just
and trying to
make
some sort of coherent map.
Can't you just make it up if you're on the development team and it's not developed yet?
No, because it was half developed.
Oh, okay.
And then they say, hey, Chris, do this. And then it's like, well... You can't touch stuff that is, you know, earmarked for other things, but you have to develop your own world. Now that you said that, Chris, we're all really proud of you. We'll all have a tear in your eye. Dan, go ahead and destroy him.
Okay.
Yes, please. Knock me down.
We had, growing up, you and then Tex and I were in very similar positions because both of us, and I'll speak of Tex and I as a single entity just to keep the pronouns more clear here, but both of us were in the same position in that we were contributing to MNA, MechForce North America, the BattleTech fan mag, and both of us were trying to get jobs to do bigger and better source books. Yet we kept coming into competition with each other, and I don't know if you ever even realized it, but we were always gunning for the same source books. We had never had an interest in the Periphery, but like we were gunning to do the Explorer Corps. And a bunch of stuff like that. And of course, we were always going for magazine space and M&A. And so we had this huge rivalry with you long before I had ever met you or known anything about you.
Unfortunately, as history says, you're obviously the one who got the books deals and they didn't.
Yeah.
And then so it was like, and believe me, I was there. It was like, damn that Chris Hussey.
But see, then we felt proud because then Chris faded into obscurity. And then we had the rising star fear the boot.
You guys are far more popular and loved than I think I ever was. And you know, and to just to set the record straight, I also was gunning for Explorer Corps, and I didn't get that either. I think I may have gotten to contribute a little bit to that, but that was that. See, and this was the guy who was my nemesis, was Chris Hartford, and I met the guy, horribly nice guy, just incredibly nice, generous guy, great guy, but damn it, he kept beating me out all the time.
And also, to continue something Dan said, he's like, you know, going from, you know, all this competition straight into Fear the Boot, let's not mention the 15 solid years of project failure led up to Fear the Boot.
And yeah, most of which had nothing to do with Chris Hussey.
Nothing to do with Chris. Well, actually...
No, I had plenty of my own failures.
I can't tell you. I could sit here. I could fill a whole show, and maybe someday we'll do a bonus episode, where Chad and I could just sit here and tell you about all the role-playing games, all the comic books, all the graphic mm-hmm. novels, all the everything you can think of we have tried to produce that has failed. Either because we dropped the ball or more often because an artist dropped the ball.
I gave up trying to be a an unsuccessful producer of creative stuff to be a totally successful bum. And then I went on to college.
Right. But we could do a whole episode about all the crap that has failed for reasons that never went beyond our own staff of people. And sometimes even us ourselves.
Right.
So
no.
You know what? I got to give you guys credit, though, simply because of the fact that between the two of you, at least there was two of you, so that you could at least make that group effort. When I was growing up, I wanted to do those exact same things, and there was all these ideas I had, but unfortunately, it was just me. I mean, the other guys in my group weren't necessarily interested. There was one who was interested, but we just were never able to just really get it together at all. I mean, and so the attempt was never really made, and so I got to give you guys kudos.
Well, see, actually, we had the reverse in that almost everyone we associated with had some kind of creative interest, either writing or art, one of the two. Almost everyone without fail that we associated with had an interest in it, was generally pretty good at.
Yeah.
One or the other.
Talent, but so, not lots of, they had a huge amount of talent, but not a whole lot of drive.
Yeah. Didn't have enough dedication.
That was a problem.
Man, all I wanted to do when I was a kid was kill player characters in the Lich Room in Deceit and take their Ultima Online gold. This is really the first major creative gamer undertaking I've undergone. And it's immediately a success.
Taste. Yeah. So it was all you, John.
That's right.
Now you know, and actually,
the only common element between you guys' successes is me. Yeah. And the common element in your failures is not me.
You know what? In fact, the first episode that Dan and I tried to record with just the two of us
went nowhere.
Was a complete failure. And we had to call you
in. That's right.
I mean, it's. Yeah. Well, so there you go.
Now you have that taste of vomit in your mouth. So.
No, this is a Kahlua White Russian.
Hey, you mix a good Caucasian, Jackie.
It's not exactly a lovingly handcrafted white Russian.
No, it's
but
not.
It's okay.
This is like Yak's anus byproduct. So
it's 5% alcohol by
there's
volume.
There's distinctly Kahlua.
And
are you serious? Is it that low?
Yeah,
that's like not even a shot.
Yeah, there's not even a shot of vodka in here. Given the fact that a significant portion of this is Kahlua,
and
I'm
non-dairy
almost
creamer,
wondering if there. Is vodka in here?
I don't think so.
Because a drop of it would not get that high. It says so on the ingredients.
I'm drinking 100% Missouri spring water, so that's why I find it funny when people buy bottled spring water in Missouri, because most of our water in the state comes from freshwater springs.
St. Louis is voted the best tap water in the country. Yeah. And Slay is talking about bottling it and selling it elsewhere while we buy bottled Evian.
You know, I've got to say, I have been all over the country. I've never been out of the country. The farthest I've been is Hawaii. But I've been north, south, all the borders, all the states in between. I've hugely, hugely traveled all over America. And I have always thought that there was something about the water everywhere I went that just didn't taste right, that didn't taste good. And I always thought it was, oh, it's just me, I'm just used to Missouri water. But no, our water is actually better than all of your people listening, unless you're in Missouri.
You
so
people
there.
Are just
that's right.
Swollen down pig slop. Speaking of pig slop, we got two shout outs we want to give out.
Hooray.
That transition made no sense, but that's why we did it.
Pig slop.
All right. First off, we are still doing the Age of Conan Guild. So
yes.
If you are interested in Age of Conan, interested
in
MMOs.
You should see our guild city.
We just lost Chris. We'll just keep doing the episode. He was extraneous anyway. But if you're interested in MMOs or playing, Age of Conan.
I'm sorry.
Anymore,
ALC.
Then we are on the Stormrage server. The guild is called House Nakash. We'll put a link to that in the show notes. And Chad, you
send
also
send a tell to Plucker or Rindrell.
Rindrell. We've got tons of people. Yeah. Also, Chad, you wanted to give a shout out and
to a forum user. I'll let you try and hook up back up with Chris there. To a forum user named Cigar Smoker, who is, you know, cleverly disguised by his name, is a cigar smoker himself. He has sent us, sent me, but I've shared with all the hosts.
Yeah, I smoked one of his Kubakubas on my graduation party. It was great.
He heard on the listener podcast that I really do enjoy cigars, and I love them to death. Probably to my death, but he sent me...
Nah, I was just getting mouth cancer. Who cares?
Yeah, they can always hack off the jaw, but...
Who needs a mandible?
And he sent us a bunch of cigars in this first run, and it like I sent him a bunch back as a thank you, and then... he went and did it again. Father's Day was rolling around, knew I had a kid, and he's like, hey, man, I'm sending you a bunch of cigars, you know, for Father's Day. Happy Father's Day, man. And he sent me, like, seven cigars. And, Dan, we smoked a couple of them. What'd you think of those?
I thought the one I smoked, I couldn't tell you what it is. I've got the label upstairs.
It's Rocky Patel did an off brand, a different brand, right. and Cigar Smoker said that they didn't work out, they didn't sell well.
Which I don't know why.
I know
that they're
fantastic.
When I smoke tobacco of any kind, I like it to be really, really smooth. I don't like spicy cigars.
You would not like an actual Rocky Patel.
No, probably
those
not.
Those are serious business. I like them too, but they are.
Don't like anything spicy or heavy. I like a real smooth smoke, and these
you like a light bodied cigar.
Yeah, and these were real smooth smoke. In fact, my favorite thing to smoke is the hookah,
right?
Because you get
that gets in beyond. That's like shisha and stuff.
Yeah,
but yeah, I love me Rocky Patels, and I love the ones he sent me, the Estebans. Or something. I mean, if they were still a brand that you could go out and buy, I would make sure everyone got the label for all the cigar smokers out there, but. Hey, man, I just want to say from me to you, thanks a lot. I appreciate the cigars.
Yeah, big thanks. Chris, welcome back.
Yes, thank you. I lost a connection there for some reason. I did want to just, Chad, just to jump on to what you said there. I recommend this for anybody who hasn't done it. Taking a couple of cigars and sitting outside with some rum and cokes with your significant other and just having general conversation as a kind of like a quarterly or monthly type of thing to do, great, great thing to do.
I agree. My wife is like, oh, I don't smoke cigars. I don't smoke cigars. John, has my wife ever smoked a cigar?
Yes.
Yes, she has.
Yeah.
Exactly. And my wife's the same way. She'll sit out there and she'll smoke a cigar too and consume the alcohol. It's a wonderful.
Yep.
Carla
yep.
won't, but that's because she has a super sensitive sense of smell, which is weird. I have the reverse because of some fluid backup in the sinuses. I have almost no sense of smell.
Because that bottle rocket I shot up your nose as a kid.
But I have a super strong sense of hearing for some reason. But anyways, I have almost no sense of smell. Next to cigars, my next favorite thing is a pipe.
I love a pipe.
But I've lost my pipe lighter and I'm out of pipe tobacco.
Mine was stolen.
Good.
Yes,
good.
My pipe lighter, my tobacco, my pouch, my pipe.
I like
stolen.
Your pipe lighter for my cigars. And I'm sad that it's stolen.
Yeah, I know. It was great. It was one of those. It was a lighter that was specifically made for pipes and stuff. Shot it like sideways, and yeah, it was stolen. Not that I'm bitter or anything like that, because it was only stolen like 3 frigging years ago, and I'm still on about it.
But. It was only like $50.
Yeah, I know. I could easily go out and replace it, but I like bitching about it so much. So
you lose a point of conversation.
Exactly.
All righty, let's pretend we do a show about role playing games.
What?
All righty, Yoin.
All right, I brought the topic this week because of an event.
Said why you called John Yoin?
Yeah, Icon.
Did we?
I don't know if we've said it
on air. I don't think
you
said on
air. Okay, well, at Icon, my name tag was Joyn.
Nice.
So I am Yoin from
Iceland.
Oslo or Reykjavik or one of these other places.
I actually kind of like Yoin.
Yoin is good.
It
rolls
too.
Off the tongue. It like has a little bit of a punch when you say it.
Yeah, that's nice.
Well, anyway, in the life and times of Yoin, I did something a little atypical of a ongoing role-playing game character, which is to say, I killed him for serious, forever, permanently. I've run a character on the mud, Dragon Realms, we've mentioned it several times, for years and years and years.
This is a for-pay...
Yes.
...online multi...
We've linked it out of the show notes.
Give us a number of years. How many years have you been on that mud?
On and off since it was on AOL 3.0 in 1996.
Wow.
On this character itself, probably
12
since
years?
2002 or 2003. So
you've been running this character longer than Chaos has been alive.
I've been playing the game for about as long as he has. But I've been running the character for 5 or 6 years, and I just did about all I could do with him, and I don't want to milk a mud addiction as I'm going to be a 1L. So I had him have a massive heart attack and die.
1L means first year law student for anyone. Not in the know.
It generally
and
means
massive heart
you're
attack
working
means
all the
massive
time.
Massive suck, by the way, for anyone who doesn't know.
Yeah, everyone's not had a massive heart attack yet.
Yeah. Well, no, I got an advanced GM to come down and
so you had it
during the middle
of a wedding.
You were
having like a wedding that you were presiding over?
I was presiding over, yes.
Now,
it
did
was
you have it
one
like,
of my
well,
text
well,
daughters.
Please kiss the bride. You're like,
oh, yeah.
Ugh.
No, I did all that stuff. I asked for objections. I did the little sermon. Had
objection.
This kiss the bride. Yeah, objection! No!
No!
I've actually done multiple text weddings as the patriarch of my little crime family, but that's all in the past now. And at the end of it, as I was talking about how great I was, I had a heart attack and just keeled over, and they dragged me back. And
wow, so it's kind of like the
death
of Herod.
Messaging. Like the what?
Death of Herod.
Yeah, sure. But the point is, permanent character death in role-playing games where it really doesn't exist.
Now,
how do you do it? Yeah. Should you do it? When do you do it?
See, we talked about this a little bit before the show, and I want to bring up a difference. I need to ask you this as a question. We have done a show on should you have player death in a show, or how do you deal with
player death?
This is
not the debate over, well, if I kill my PCs, they're just going to get huffy and make a crappy character.
Yeah.
Or
what is the difference?
They're going to remake it. The difference is this is a question of verisimilitude, let's call it, of setting cohesion. You have these worlds like D&D where death really isn't that much of an inconvenience, especially not to a named player character, the P is on their forehead adventuring party. That's kind of dirty. But
not to R. Kelly.
Well, no, not at all.
If you live in Waterworld, I guess it's okay. Or that would be Water Sport World.
Chris, you are gross. But anyway, yeah, that's...
Send the rubber bed
the question is not
Chris
what to do with the player character group. The question is, can you write a world in which nobody dies, and yet you have to periodically have a character die for the sake of drama?
Yeah. Resurrection is easy.
Yeah.
It's a couple of copper, there's not really much...
Or a phoenix down.
Yeah.
But when it's time for plot death, quote-unquote,
a player wants...
Eris has to sink to the bottom of the lake.
A player wants to die, or a player does something so stupid that you and the GM as the party say... Okay, you gotta die over this.
Yeah. Or even something as simple as actually killing the villain.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you're what's-his-face from the Tomb of Horrors and they don't even find you if they win, you probably are gonna kill the bad guy.
Yeah. What do you do? John, what do you do on that?
I BS it.
I've gotta say, I sitting here thinking about it, I have noticed a great deal of inconsistency around that. For the reasons you guys have stated, even Eris aside, when I was playing Final Fantasy VII, for example, and this is true of all the games, I remember when Tifa was talking about the death of her teacher, and the guy was alive, but just badly beaten. It's like, well, I don't see anything here that a Kuraga and maybe a Phoenix Down would solve.
Yeah.
And yet, for no particular reason, he dies of his wounds, even though my guys regularly get mauled in one hit from 5,000 hit points down to zero, and they pop right back up. D&D. Okay, granted. I realize that more goes into resurrection than a cure, you know, a little cure spell or a...
Yeah, but if you're facing a serious villain with lackeys and resources and all this stuff, he can just come back.
Yeah, why doesn't the Priest of Bane just show up and res his ass? And, yeah,
I mean, it's some of the higher level stuff, you don't even need the toenail or whatever. You can just wish him back out of nothing.
Yeah. So what do you do as a GM?
I exploit the natural causes loophole.
You know what I do?
What's a...
Don't play settings like
Yeah, you... I typically don't either, actually. Yeah. I run sci-fi these days.
You know, I go there
almost
sci-fi.
All the time.
Yeah, I run sci-fi or low magic. You know, it's like I have the gods, or if there even is a god or a pet, they're hands off.
Yeah, your magic does not have a codified by the level spell book. It's magic. It's weird.
Yeah.
No one knows how it works.
Yeah. It could be a firework that you light and nobody knows what gunpowder is to like some arcane mystical thing that you're going to pay for if you do it.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's me. I don't like high fantasy. I don't like, and it doesn't even get to the, what we're talking about here of the death and all that. That's like way down the road for me. I don't like the wizards riding unicorns over rainbows.
I do run, well, not the wizards riding unicorns
yes,
over
you
rainbows.
Do.
So all it comes to there is, to mind there is the sex scene from the Anchorman. But,
I was thinking of Belisera and of the multiple sex scenes I've already written for my fanfic.
Excellent.
Actually, I haven't written anything else. I've kind of got to find a way to glue them together.
Do some reading on Catherine the Great.
That expression right there opens up all kinds of...
Yeah, I was kind of putting that out there. And no one bit.
I picked it up. I just didn't comment on the fact that I picked it up until now.
All right. We'll put that out to pasture. But anyway.
Rein that in.
Yeah.
This is horseshit.
Come on, giddy up. Let's go. Let's get to your point.
John's such a stud.
These puns are starting to tail off.
Yeah, stop nagging me. I don't want
to. Can we stick on the main topic, please?
You know, you're saddling ourselves as being bad podcasters here, so.
All right, let me hoof it on to the next point then.
All right, just a little bit.
Secretariat.
First Triple Crown winner. Anyway, getting back to the non-horse stuff. With Resurrection, the way I do it is I try to put, and I do run high fantasy settings, and I will run settings.
Wizards on unicorns over rainbows.
Never mind. But I'm not going to start this all over again. It's like Groundhog Day on a podcast. But what I do is I take certain spells or certain powers and say, look, for the sake of keeping any kind of continuity in the game, these have to be, however hard the book says they are, they're harder. Wish is an example. Resurrection is an example. The Greater Restoration, or whatever it's called, is another example. That however difficult in the it says they are in the book, I make them even harder. You want to bring someone back from the dead, you have to have the body and do ceremonies, and you have to convince the god to bring some kind of special favor, and the god's probably going to say no. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot that goes into this. Wish is the same way, that if you want to cast a wish, there's going to be all kinds of reagents involved and big stuff, and it's going to suck away some of your life force. And
do you do XP spell costs?
No, absolutely not.
I think that's
not.
So dumb.
I don't do
XP.
Well, I think XP... Yeah.
You don't do mechanics.
Well, third edition, I think, made a big mistake with not just XP spell costs, but also XP item creation.
Yeah, that's even stupider.
Because now, all of a sudden, if you're a wizard or a cleric, the fighter and thief you're supporting are now 4 levels higher than you because of the things you've done for them.
Well, not that that didn't happen in second edition. What with thieves requiring half the experience?
Well, but they also weren't balanced power-wise. That's so true. I mean, there came a point actually in our gaming history with second edition where we stopped saying make a 5th level character, and we'd start saying things like make a 20,000 experience.
Oh no, you
character.
Had to do it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you made a 5th level character in 2E and you didn't make it a wizard, you were a bonehead.
Yeah.
Or maybe a paladin, because you could get by the charisma requirement or whatever. I don't know.
My whole problem with where it is readily available, you know, where it is as accessible as Chad was describing, is that it still seems to me you're gonna run into the real world issues. You know, let's say it's 20 gold to get resurrected. Well, you're gonna have a class of people who just flat out never have access to that level of money. And now we're talking social issues here. We're talking.
Are you
serious...
running Renfair D&D where everyone is a lord? Are you running a medieval game where you
exactly.
all have cholera?
You have some serious class discrepancies here, as in social class. And you're going to run into problems. You know, you're going to the campaign is going to be suddenly become something about dealing with the revolution that's happening because the peasants are revolting because they have to die. That's not cool.
Yeah, you know, I dealt with something similar in science fiction, and the way I got around it there was same thing. Just like in fantasy, I put stipulations on it that, for example, for anyone to be, like, your body can be regenerated from almost nothing, but you still have to have the central nervous system there, because otherwise you're creating a blank clone. You're not creating this person with all their memories and experiences and, you know, but you're right, because
you
if you
Nexus 6 chips.
Whether it's in science fiction or in fantasy, if you allow that, if you have enough money and you know the right names, someone can bring you back from the dead once per day. You've got a definite weird social situation as well, because you're right. What kind of a war would there be if 5% of the population didn't just have better health care? They were effectively immortal.
Yeah.
Or if not immortal, because typically D&D says, well, you can still die of old age.
Yeah, that's always the catch. Age. Natural causes.
But
the
point
die.
Being
but,
that.
But
no
high
one...
science fiction settings don't say that.
Right. Yeah, because you rewind the telomeres and undo. There's two kinds of aging. I forget the different types, but you undo the second kind
cell
of aging.
Cell apoptosis.
Yeah, there's aging up and then
boring.
Aging down. But you undo the
hey,
second.
Hey, man, this is Alpha Centauri.
But
this is good stuff.
You undo
only
the second kind of aging.
I've seen with your eyes.
Your eyes.
Man, what would you do? I mean, to fight, what would you be willing to sacrifice to fight for a world in which you didn't have to die?
CEO Robert K. Morgan was willing to do
85.
Anything.
You see, that's why. See, I don't have an answer for that because I think it's so incredibly cheesy. I
and
mean,
it goes
I
back to the
is...
question of why would an elf risk himself? You know,
yeah, yeah, because an elf, like a vampire or an elf or something like that, or an ancient god, why would they risk themselves? Because they're effectively more than they've
because
been immortal
for
in
a Tolkien
thousand
book,
years.
He'll cry
yeah,
about
not,
how many summers
not,
you lost in the
why
woods.
Why not risk yourself? I mean,
Yeah, because you're so incredibly bored, you're ready to die after 5,000 years? Sure, but I can buy that. But
you risk yourself knowing that... Oh,
because
hell,
you're an elf even if and I, you're embarrassed? I mean...
Even if I do die, I'm still going to be able to come back, so it's something to do this afternoon. Let's just go and, you know, check out this lich tomb, whatever.
That's true. It's the ultimate way to see the other side, is to get yourself killed and come back.
True.
Why do you...
There's very little discussion about the afterlife as experienced by freshly dead D&D characters.
Let's say you're a bunch of like Bane worshippers or whatever, and one of you dies and burns in hell.
Well,
and then your buddy brings you back, and you're like, hey, man, maybe we shouldn't follow this religion so much.
It gets into the whole, well, why is my guy risking his life, limb, and sanity to search through a dungeon to fight the Lich King that's raising an army of the dead? Why isn't he a farmer with
a wife
and a kid?
Well, the Lich King brings another set of problems with him.
Well, with a wife and a kid and a stable income and happiness and stuff. Well, or you could make the quick buck, and the only danger of becoming an adventurer is that you're going to die. But you can't die necessarily.
Something else I've introduced into the game to try and help with that a little bit.
Gelatinous cubes that completely disintegrate the body.
Well, but as you pointed out, depending on your version of D&D, that may not even be an issue.
True.
The obligatory soul-consuming gem.
Well, more than that, it's the soul may not want to come back. That just because the player wants their character to come back, your character just died. You just went from this complete poop hole of a world filled with suffering and cholera and heartache and disease and betrayal, and you're now...
God, how depressing.
Well, and the, but
look
that,
at the real world
this,
around
you.
I mean, you're now sitting in...
I like the world. I like being alive.
Yeah, and I bet if you'd experienced eternal paradise, your view on that would be like, maybe it wasn't so great after all. And the soul may not
want... I've had a really nice cigar and a good steak and...
The soul may not...
The lady... Oh, I'm sorry.
How's G.K. Chesterton?
Well, you get into the... then you become the... what's his name? The character from The Matrix who decides to go ahead and do that.
But...
essentially be dead.
You know what? On a side note, I never understood that character because his whole thing is that he wanted to eat steak, he wanted to get laid, he wanted to do this, but they had programs on the ship that can simulate tons of guns and tons of clothes and kung fu.
Take you out at the end of the day, you have to eat the porridge to stay alive. And
but I
cold.
Think that and the difference is that he would have known that in the Matrix you
yeah,
don't
he,
know.
That's the big thing he wanted back was his ignorance of reality.
I don't know if he wanted
that was his sin. Oh yes, he did. Yeah, he demanded to not remember
he
anything.
He said, "I want to remember nothing."
Yeah. Oh,
but,
okay.
You know,
oh, well,
but,
that does
Dan,
make sense.
Dan, getting back to your point though, what if you come back but realize that you don't want to come back? That's really that comes down to a character issue, but still that player's in charge, and the player wants the character back because they have this emotional investment in it. But yet, how do you convince the player then to look at this from a logical standpoint in the sense that your character just went to a paradise compared to where you are now? Why would you want to come back?
Well,
what real motivation really makes you want to have this character come back?
Well, it's the same way in which I would handle, like, your character's in writhing pain. Well, it's real easy for the player to say, okay, I don't care. You know, my character's tough. He doesn't feel pain. And it's like, no, BS. You feel pain.
Okay, Phil, you feel pain.
Yeah. And so it's kind of, I do the same thing of like, you know, okay, just because you want the guy to come back does not mean that he's going to be willing to come back.
I think all dogs go to heaven tackled this issue very tastefully.
How disgusting. What did they do?
The dog didn't go to heaven. That's why he came back. Was during
his
way.
He went back to Earth to like help his friend or something.
Because he wasn't going to get into heaven.
Oh, was it like a purgatory sort of type?
No, he was going to hell. And
oh, really?
Yeah.
Was he really bad?
I thought he was going to heaven, but then backed out. And then they were like, you can never come back.
He went to heaven, and then they counted him out or whatever. Like, all dogs go to heaven. And they were looking for his name and couldn't find it. And then so they sent him back down to basically.
Dude, that was brutal. I take it
I don't
back.
Think I should have
And he died at the end of the movie and went to heaven.
Well, he went to heaven.
Oh, great. I never seen it. Thanks a lot.
Dude,
spoilers.
The dog goes to heaven.
Yeah. By the way, if you're really interested in all
She's
dogs
a he.
Go to heaven, the ship sinks.
Next thing you know, you're going to start talking about the Crying Game. And now you're just going to ruin everything.
He just did.
Guess he's never seen that one either.
I have seen the Crying Game.
Actually, I think Crying Game is a fantastic movie. And I do not think that the peak of it, the big hit of it, is not there's a penis. I mean, that's kind of like what gets...
I'd be crying,
movie.
Too.
It's an interesting movie. The overall plot, that's just one part of... The penis is just one part of the plot.
The pinnacle of the movie.
The pinnacle.
It's just the tip, is what you're saying?
You like pina colada.
And then that actor went on to play the Egyptian guy in the Stargate movie, which was really awful, and then you never heard from him again.
The Greek philosopher Epididymus.
But Rupert Holmes still keeps coming back.
You know what? One point I did want to make about this, and when John brought up this topic, was, you know, it seems to me in a world where
with a
we gotta get that guy to do a voiceover for the beat
on New Aragorn.
But the it would seem to me then that character death really that becomes a central plot point where there should be a tremendous amount of drama and a tremendous amount of role playing because if it's something that doesn't happen, then the fact that it's happening itself is a major event.
That's exactly what happened in the mud. It was like a character died. Wait, what?
And didn't respawn.
The whole world stopped. Yeah.
Exactly. And it should carry that kind of weight because, you know, whether it's through conscious choice or through something that, you know, happens, like, oh, he has a massive heart attack and then goes and then is for some reason unsavable. That's, that should be played out as a central drama point and could be also then a springboard for future campaigns, because really in a world where death doesn't happen, eventually, looking from a social perspective, it's going to get to the point where people don't regard death as death. It's going to be, oh, he's just out, let's bring him back. And any thoughts of afterlife by the general population, that's going to go away. So people aren't even going to really be thinking about an afterlife, which in itself is an adventure.
I think it would get worse than that. I think that it would get to a point to where not death has no meaning, but life has no meaning. And then when life starts to have no meaning, then you start to see that in real world examples, you know, Nazi Germany and, you know, the just dictators around the world doing terrible things to people because life and death.
Socialist Canada. Happy Canada Day.
Indeed.
You know, I almost bought Labatt Blue again.
No.
But I realized my mistake the first time.
Dude, we got Kahlua and non-dairy creamer, man. That's kind of gross.
Ouch.
Slight vodka residue. I think they coated the bottle with it maybe 10 years ago.
Best served chilled.
Yeah, no poop.
Yeah. How much you pay for that, John?
I think these came out to like $1.25 a bottle. That's acceptable.
Yeah.
Okay, role-playing games.
No, it's not.
No.
All right.
Not role-playing games.
Alcohol, cigars, lewd sex jokes, and Dungeons & Dragons.
Welcome to Fear the Boot.
Another thing you have to consider are the demographic effects of a world without death.
Nice segue, by the way.
I mean, if nobody dies and people keep growing up and having kids, you're going to reach population disaster crash levels pretty quick, even with your crappy medieval food production, which is going to make it worse.
Even beyond like the practical social implications, you know, it's like, do we have the land unit production to produce this much food for this amount? Which is really, really boring in a role-playing game.
Yeah.
You know,
well, that's the other argument.
Yeah.
No, this is boring and dumb. Stop thinking about it. There's gold in the ground. Go get it.
Yeah.
It's, but if you in a world without death for the demographic information, what's the point of creating more life? I mean, if you yourself are going to be living forever, really, what's the point of bringing...
Because there's no Durex condom company in Ilanthia or the Flanace or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, but... You
even
know,
M&M wrappers won't be invented for another several thousand years.
There's still sheep's, intestines.
Wait, there's still vasectomies.
I'm just saying, you're not going to do condoms.
You're
going
to go to a medieval surgeon to get a vasectomy done. Am I hearing
you
this right?
You look like you could use a good bleeding.
They put a leech down there? I mean, what?
Like I said, the practical aspects are really boring, and then they come up with silly conversations like this. Things that I don't want to role play about.
Are you trying to say that because you could get into a Children of Men situation where people either A, because everyone is now living forever, the body may itself then shut down its own natural reproduction because it doesn't need to carry on the species because, well, hell, I am the species because I'm going on forever. And you're going to get into more social demographic issues when you have minority groups minority groups.
I'm trying to tell a story about dragons eating princesses and then, you know, rolling off and saving the dragons from heartburn, you know? It's like, who cares? I mean, that's when you get into that high of fantasy, I think that's what it gets into. You know, it's like you don't yes, the priest down the road can resurrect anybody they want by praying. I mean, personally, how I would get around that is like, you know, it's a faith issue. It's like, this is a special, interesting, different thing that isn't done every day. And it's like this big major occurrence, like, you know, when the hero of the realm dies, the people come together and pray and then raise him.
Yeah, I guess that's another angle you could take. The church holds this tight monopoly on it, won't do it for hardly anybody.
Yeah, yeah. The peasantry is just poo-poo, but who cares? But, you know, my thing is like, what do people start thinking about? Not food production and, boy, we better start 3 women to 1 man. We better start getting to production. But like I was saying earlier, you know, they stop caring about life and death stops holding meaning. I would actually think that that would be a interesting world to role play in, where you have a world where, you know, resurrection is cheap and easy and commonplace. And the worst thing that
war is constant because no one cares.
Well, no, the worst thing that can happen to you is injury and pain. And you know, how would people
deal with that? The power gamers, hell.
Yeah.
A permanent injury is far worse than death.
Yeah, and then the NPC, let's role play, let's all hug each other and sing Kumbaya and pass the stick, is the pain. You know, it's like I get stabbed, well, I might just leave a scar, but it hurts.
If you're talking about the same settings where you can bring someone back from the dead, you can probably cure that injury.
Yeah.
Because if you're talking about fantasy... regeneration's lower than resurrection. If you're talking about sci-fi, regeneration's
but
easier than
resurrection. But if I stab you with a sword...
Well,
you're
going to
cry like a girl.
Sure, until somebody walks over and waves the...
Until a first-level cleric
says... That's what I'm saying, is that in that society, it's not... I mean, when we think, you and me and John and Chris think about getting stabbed with a sword, I don't know about you guys, but if somebody stabs with a sword, it's like, oh my God, I'm going to die with my guts on my shoes.
Right.
But in that society, they don't think that. They know they're not going to die. But they think, oh my God, this is going to hurt for a really long time until I get resurrected or whatever.
So they're Cylons.
You know, I think the one thing this episode has brought out is really just how much of a suspension of disbelief we have to use to make so many
role-playing.
That's
kind of where I was going
because,
with this.
You know, I know throughout the show, one of the things that I've always said is that I can accept any reality as long as the reality is internally consistent. As long as there's some rhyme and reason to what happens and what doesn't and the whys behind each. It's the example I've used before. There's a role-playing game where I finally just looked at the game master and said, I flap my arms and fly away. It's like, well, you can't do it. I'm like, why not? Equally ridiculous things are happening all the time in this game.
For absolutely
no good
consistent
reason. Just,
it doesn't even have to be explained. There's no consistency.
Yeah, they just do it. They just work because they work. And I think death is one of those issues that, I mean, let's face it, this has been around as long as any type of gaming's been around. Anytime.
20 years. 30 years.
Yes,
40 years.
When Pitfall Harry fell into the tar trap and another Pitfall Harry dropped out of the top of the screen.
Yeah.
Where the hell did the next other Pitfall Harry come from? Is his mom up there just churning him out? But I mean, this has been around as long
as... How can you explain the Konami code? I defy you to, sir. Because it does not exist in your philosophy.
Because the player wants to play on. The player wants some sense that the ultimate mistake, or maybe even just the bad coincidence, if you walk beneath someone pushing the piano out of an upper story window,
well,
it does not have a permanent consequence.
I'll say this. The player wants a good story. Now, a good story might be the player plays on. Or if it's a different kind of story, the good story might be the player dies.
Yeah.
And does not come back. Both are, and I think ultimately in a role play, now in a video, in Contra, I do not want one life. I want 30. In fact, I want 40 lives, but that's just
too bad because the Konami code gives you
30, but that's just me. But in a role playing game, I personally, just me, is the type of person where I want the ultra realistic game. I want if a player dies, they die, and we interweave it with the story, and they even have the death scene where they're coughing up blood and saying their final words. It's so cheesy, but it's good.
And it's Metal Gear, and the death scene goes on for 30 minutes. Constant stream of blood gushing out of their mouth the entire time.
18 gallons of blood come out.
Flipping to the codec, because then no one else can hear us, and including our budget.
What it comes down to really is planning. You know, you really have to take a look at those issues, and, you know, is resurrection a possibility in my game? If so, to what degree? And what are the, you know, what are the social implications of it? Because it can and does, you know, color the world that you have.
Yeah, I agree. It's just like in sci-fi, you know, you ask certain questions like, well, what level of science do we want? Science that's around today? Do we want like super science that borders a magical? Do we want shields on the ships and that sort of thing? Yeah, this is all questions that you have to gauge with your players. You know, it's like you, I mean, ultimately you have to ask your players like, listen, do you guys want to die or not? And if they say, no, we really don't necessarily want to die, then you got to say, well, okay, how real do you want that? And how meta do you want that? Do we just want to say there's rezzing and take you to a church and spend a few gold and you're done?
Or do you want the GM deflector screen?
Yeah.
Or which I refuse to give anyone.
Yeah. Or do you want, like, you know, like I was saying earlier, it's a national tragedy when the players die and that there's a huge service and all the people come out and it's the prayers of the populace that bring you back. But, you know, I mean, it's like, whatever, you work it out with your players.
And the reason this is only an issue, I think, personally, I mean, granted, you could have, you know, had the spell, you know, raised dead, never been thought up, you could have incorporated this at some point, you know, as a house rule, but those spells really are nothing but game balance things. I mean, by the time you can actually cast that spell, you have so much emotional investment into this character and likely so much emotional investment in the campaign that you're in to have a character die because of a lucky roll on the DM side is very frustrating. And it could really break up the flow and the consistency of the campaign. So, I mean, that's why spells like this were invented in the first place, to allow the players to sidestep that somewhat. At least that's my opinion.
Yeah.
No, it is.
Personally,
it's the Pitfall Harry drop of D&D.
Yeah, it's the one-ups.
And personally, what I do is I keep edging it. You know, I it's like a person that dies, but instead of dying, they suffer like more increasing grievous injuries. But you can only do that so much. And then
you count to two and two and a half and two and three quarters. I've seen you do it.
It becomes ridiculous. It becomes as ridiculous as...
Yeah, that's why I tell you not to do it with me, and that's why you kill my PCs.
Yeah.
Everyone is happy.
Yeah, it's great.
I think we're going to go ahead and let this episode die and stay dead, so...
Thank you. Can bring it back with one cast of...
Resurrect yourself next week.
So cheers. Thank you guys for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
Till later days. Rez again.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2008, fully owned by its hosts. Our theme song was written and performed by Tim White. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.